Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. And produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition WS 810 for release on Sunday, September 1st, 2024. On the program today, Island Hopping in the Pacific, Part 2, Inuwetok and Makin, Trends in Shortwave Programming, and our Japan DX report. Last week, Ray Robinson began a two-part look at some of the low-power American Forces radio service stations that were established on various islands in the Central and Western Pacific during the latter years of World War II. This week, he continues the story with two more such stations on the islands of Inuwetok and Makin.
Thanks, Jeff. Inuwetok is a large, isolated coral atoll in the northwestern corner of the Marshall Islands in the Central Pacific. It actually consists of 40 small, low, sandy islands with a total area of a little more than 2 square miles. The very large lagoon in the middle of all these small islands covers almost 400 square miles. The island of Inuwetok itself is just 2 miles long and a quarter mile wide. In the early era of European exploration, Inuwetok was technically a Spanish territory as one of the Marshall Islands. However, Inuwetok itself was unknown to Europeans until the English merchant ship Walpole visited the island in 1794 and named it Brown's Range. In 1885, Germany assumed control of the Marshalls, including Inuwetok, and in 1914 it was captured by the Japanese and renamed Brown's Island. The League of Nations mandated this island to Japan in 1920. Inuwetok was captured by the Americans on February 20, 1944, and on July the 15th of that year, station WXLE was launched with 50 watts on 1330 kHz. This new station was listed as the second AFRS station in the Pacific, with WVUQ on Guadalcanal as the first. Initially, station WXLE was a member of the Jungle Network, and subsequently it was listed with the Pacific Ocean Network. When this station was first heard in Australia and New Zealand, the on-air announcements identified the station as AFRS 1, American Forces Radio Service Station 1. A few weeks later, the on-air announcements identified the station as AES, American Expeditionary Station, and soon again the regular call sign was noted, WXLE. It seems that the frequency for WXLE was adjusted slightly in 1945 to 1320 kHz, and then the station was closed again on March 4, 1947. In the early 1950s, WXLE on Inuwetok was reactivated, apparently using the old equipment, and shortly afterwards the station's transmitter was upgraded to a 250-watt unit on the split-channel frequency of 1385 kHz. And then in 1956, Inuwetok was used as the site for the world's first test of the awesome hydrogen bomb. Somehow, the station managed to continue operation throughout the 50s and 60s, even though the island wasn't declared to be free from radioactive contamination until 1977. In 1969, though, the entire radio facility was transferred to Canton Island, the only inhabited island in the Phoenix Group, some 1,200 miles away. The station went on the air at its new location, as we mentioned last week, under the old call sign, and thus on Canton there have been two call signs in use, both WXLF and WXLE. A lot of other equipment on Inuwetok Island was also transferred to Canton Island, including the airport vehicle that led aircraft along the tarmac. Amusingly, pilots of that era landing on Canton reported seeing the sign on the back of the truck ahead of the airplane, which read, "Welcome to Inuwetok," 1,200 miles away. The only known QSL from station WXLE while it was located on Inuwetok before it moved to Canton was issued to a listener in New Zealand. This was while it was operating with 250 watts on 1385 kHz. The QSL letter is best described as a duplicated form letter with the QSL details filled in afterwards. And thus, as we mentioned in our programme last week, there's been a lot of interesting confusion regarding the radio stations located on the Pacific Islands known as Tarawa, Eniwetok and Canton. Tarawa and Canton both had a radio station with the same call sign, WXLF, and radio station WXLE was on the air at two different locations, first on Eniwetok and then later on Canton. And then there's Makin. 20 years or so ago, David Rickish, a well-known radio historian in New Zealand, noticed an interesting picture for sale on eBay. The picture that caught his attention was a colour photo showing one of the exotic entertainment radio stations that American forces established throughout the Pacific in the mid-1940s. This particular picture was a page from a National Geographic magazine, and it showed the station, WXLH, on the island of Makin. In the purchasing arrangement regarding the picture, David asked our editor-in-chief, Dr. Adrian Peterson, to receive the item from the seller in the USA. When the picture was received in Indianapolis, it was quickly discovered that it showed a very valuable piece of old radio history, portrayed beautifully. The 60-year-old picture was copied and the original was then forwarded on to New Zealand. This colour picture shows an idyllic scene on the island of Makin, complete with coconut palm trees, thatched huts and servicemen relaxing between duties. Large in the picture is another thatched building that contains the exotic radio station with an American homeland call sign, WXLH. The locally made but rather neat and ornate identification sign states Radio Makin WXLH, American Expeditionary Station, Armed Forces Radio Service. Very few pictures of these unique temporary radio stations have survived, so this item spurred us on to research more about this AFRS unit. The island of Makin is the most northerly island in western Kiribati, another in the Gilbert group. It's described as a lagoonless tropical island of coral origin, about 7.5 miles long and just over 1 mile wide. The local people say that the shape of the island resembles an exclamation mark. The original inhabitants came from Samoa 500 years ago. English traders and missionaries came to the island 150 years ago, and soon afterwards it was the home for the famous novelist Robert Louis Stevenson for a year or two. The Japanese invaded the Gilbert Islands in early December 1941, and American forces arrived almost exactly 2 years later. The only radio broadcasting station ever installed on the island of Makin was the aforementioned AFRS unit, WXLH. The best available information tells us that the station was inaugurated on July the 15th, 1944, with 1 kilowatt on 1400 kilohertz. A glimpse at the picture showing station WXLH would suggest that it was really quite a substantial station in view of the local and temporary circumstances. This has been the only station ever set up on Makin, and it was part of what was called at the time the Pacific Ocean Network, PON. Pre-recorded programming for this unique little radio station came from the PON headquarters in Hawaii and AFRS headquarters in California. It also relayed off-air transmissions on shortwave from California and produced some programs locally. WXLH operated on Makin Island for just a little less than 6 months, from mid-July to sometime in December during the year 1944. With the changing tide of events in the Pacific, WXLH was then closed, dismantled, transferred and reinstalled on another island, this time on Okinawa in the Ryukyu Islands, where it took to the air with the same call sign, though on a different frequency, 680 kHz. The inauguration date on Okinawa for the transferred WXLH was May the 20th, 1945. There are no known QSLs from this station while it was on Makin, though several international radio monitors in Australia and New Zealand, and probably California also, did send reports to the station. These days, there are some 1,500 inhabitants on Makin Island without any local station. But Radio Kiribati still operates two 10-kilowatt medium-wave transmitters for coverage of the country's very scattered island populations. In the west, they transmit from Tarawa on 1440 kHz, and this can be heard on Makin, 95 miles distant, straight across the wide blue Pacific. In the east, they use 846 kHz on Christmas Island. There are also three FM stations in Tarawa broadcasting in Gilbertese, plus an outlet of ABC Radio Australia in English. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray will be bringing us up to date with the continuing story of Radio Caroline. For the past 3 weeks on WaveScan, we've been airing portions of a conversation between Ray Robinson and myself at the 2024 annual meeting of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, which took place July 22nd and 23rd. Today, here's the final part of our conversation. Glenn Tapley is the president of the NASB. He's at WEWN Shortwave in Birmingham, Alabama. And he gave an interesting presentation via Zoom. Because of the IT problems, he was not able to actually fly here because his flights were all canceled from Birmingham to Atlanta and Atlanta to Toronto.
Yes, the CrowdStrike issue crowd struck Glenn.
Yes. So he had to join us via Zoom also. He gave an interesting talk about a little bit about the history of EWTN, the Eternal Word Television Network, which operates WEWN. And Glenn was very instrumental in actually the beginning of the shortwave there, wasn't he?
That's right. He talked a little bit about the history of the station and how the nun who founded it had originally had the concept for it. But
Mother Angelica.
Yeah. Mother Angelica. He was directly involved in the construction of their transmission site, and it told us about the difficulties of getting concrete mixers up the hill that it's on. The time it was an unpaved road and went up the side of a steep hill and had a very tight hairpin turn, and getting the trucks up there was quite something. He said they had to unload the concrete mixers to only one third of their capacity before they had the ability to make the turn and get up the hill. And then also with the flatbeds, with the antenna mast sections on them, also very difficult to get them up the mountain. But he managed, and the station was constructed, and it's been very successful.
Yeah, I went there once when we had the NASB meeting in Birmingham, and so hairpin turns up the up the hill there. NASB business meeting was the last item on the agenda, and we're talking about one of two interesting places for next year's meeting, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters, but the meetings are always open to interested listeners, DXers. We encourage people to come, and we've had several come here this week, particularly people who happen to live locally in Hamilton or not too far away in Ontario. And it's always fun to have people like that come as well. So, yes, we were looking at a couple of different options. Radio Free Asia has made an invitation, open invitation to us to go to their facility in Washington, D.C. if we want. But also we were given the option of going to KNLS facility in Anchor Point, Alaska. And it remains to be seen what arrangements can be made. We've got to look at limited hotel and transportation issues and see whether that can be made to work or not. But we're potentially looking at July of next year, 2025, for a meeting in one of those two locations. I think if we can make Alaska work, we will. If not, then we'll be in D.C.
KNLS is one of the NASB members, been a member for many, many years. But one of the members that has not hosted a meeting yet, so that would be interesting. The other two are on Guam, I think.
Well, that's right. I think Guam would be a long way to go and very expensive to get there. So that although there are two shortwave stations on there that are members of NASB, maybe a step too far.
We talked about maybe combining it with an HFCC conference out there maybe sometime.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah.
And so now we are about to take off for lunch. The meeting has just ended. And then it's sightseeing at Niagara Falls, right?
Apparently, yeah. Yeah, I was at Niagara, oh, a long time ago, 1996. I was at a conference in Toronto. And we, on Sunday afternoon, we drove from Toronto down to Niagara and spent a couple of hours there. It's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to going there again.
Yeah. Tim Whitehead from Galcom was saying we could either walk behind the falls or take the Mayor of the Mist boat underneath the falls. And then we have a group dinner planned this evening at the Skylon Tower, and a big observation deck overlooking the falls should have a pretty good view.
Yeah. So if you're hearing this, then you know we survived that trip, made it back okay, and Jeff got it on air.
All right, Ray. Well, thanks very much. And we'll be, of course, talking to you every week.
Hope so. I'll do my best.
Take care. Ray Robinson and I were chatting there at the 2024 annual meeting of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, midway between Toronto and Niagara Falls. At the NASB meeting, one of the speakers who was on the agenda was Fred Waterer, a longtime friend of ours who lives in the Niagara Falls area and edits a shortwave programming column in the monthly Spectrum Monitor online publication, as well as a similar column for the Ontario DX Association. Unfortunately, at the last minute, Fred became ill, possibly with COVID, so he couldn't make it to the meeting. But he did send us his prepared remarks, which we read at the meeting, and I will read for you here today. Fred said, "Good morning and welcome to Canada. Thank you to Galcom for hosting the meeting and for giving me this opportunity to speak to the conference. I was thinking for a long time about what I could bring to the conference today. I tried to think of what sort of insight I could bring to the discussion, which wasn't already obvious to the broadcasters and program creators in attendance. And I wondered what information I could present that might be of interest to any shortwave listeners who may be attending, who would have their own perspectives and insights. I think we all have our own origin stories when it comes to shortwave. In my case, it was a hot, humid July day, not unlike this one, in 1978. I was 17. With nothing to do, I started playing with an old German radio that had been in my house all my life. The buttons were all very mysterious. I already knew that UKW would get me the FM band. I pressed KW and absent-mindedly spun the dial. I landed on a station with a woman speaking in English. No big deal. I almost tuned out until she said something that blew my mind. You're listening to Radio Sofia, Bulgaria. I was astounded. How can this be? That moment changed my life. In the pre-internet world, I tried to find whatever information I could about this sorcery. Not unlike today, it was not always easy to find. I scribbled down every station address and frequency schedule as I would hear them. 1978 was an excellent year in the sunspot cycle. Within a very short period of time, I had heard stations on 6 different continents. By early August, I had my first QSL card, 8CJB in Quito, Ecuador, and I was off on an adventure which continues to this day. I discovered DX clubs and guidebooks like the World Radio TV Handbook. I had a front row seat for world events, some amazing and some tragic. That's my shortwave origins elevator story. Well, here it is 44 years later, and I still get excited about hearing distant radio stations from around the world. And I still approach things from the perspective of a hobbyist, as a fan of the media. In 1986, I sent in an article to Harold Sellers, chairman of the Ontario DX Association, and it was published. He then asked me if I might be interested in taking over the listening in column in the club bulletin. I thought that might be fun for a while. I never realized that it would also turn into such a long-term adventure. Over the years, I've written similar columns for the ODXA, Monitoring Times, and now its digital successor, the Spectrum Monitor. And we'll continue with Fred Waterer's remarks about trends in shortwave 2 weeks from now on Wavescan. Now, it's over to Yukiko Tsuji in Japan.
Welcome to the DX Report of the Month from Japan Shortwave Club, edited by Toshi Otake and I'm Yukiko Tsuji. We have several DX reports from our club members this week. KTWR Guam was heard on 11965 kHz on August 4th from 10:55 to the sign-off at 11:15 UTC. SIO rating was 454. Indonesian program was aired until 10:58, then interval signal was played. Bread of Life in English started at 1100. Radio Vanuatu was heard on 7260 kHz on July 24th from 10:25 to the sign-off at 11:05 UTC in Bislama. SIO rating was 343. Local pop music and the talk program were broadcast. Time signal and ID were given at 10:34. It closed with national anthem at 11:04. Myanmar radio was heard on 5985 kHz on August 11th from 1528 to 1558 UTC. SIO rating was 343. Talk program in Burmese was aired until 1530, then ID was given in English and the news started. Local songs were played at 1553, but it was covered by China Radio International at 1558. FEBA via Tashkent, Uzbekistan, was received on 13660 kHz on August 10th, from 1440 to the sign-off at 1500 UTC in Hindi. SIO rating was 353. Talk program and hymn were on the air. Bible Voice Broadcasting via Tashkent, Uzbekistan, was heard on 17760 kHz on August 3rd, from 1210 to the sign-off at 1230 UTC in English. SIO rating was 353. Talk program and hymn were broadcast. ID was given at 1229. Radio Elgo via Davaya, UAE, was heard on 21595 kHz on August 10th from 1245 to the sign-off at 1300 UTC in Somali. SIO rating was 353. Talk program and local song were aired. Radio Fada via Kuwait was received on 9370 kHz on August 6th from 1845 to the sign-off at 1959 UTC in Persian. SIO rating was 454, then up to 554. News and commentary with correspondent report were broadcast until 1930. The music program started. ID was given many times. Adventist World Radio via Mosbrunn, Austria, was heard on 15440 kHz on August 7th, from the sign-on at 2030 to the sign-off at 2100 UTC in French. SIO rating was 352. ID was given in English at 2030, then talk program and gospel songs in French were on the air. BBC World Service via Ascension was heard on 17830 kHz on August 7th from 1830 to 1845 UTC in English. SIO rating was 454. ID was given at 1830, and a big story in Paris Olympic Games and BBC News were broadcast until 1832, then Sport Today program started. Finally, Japan Shortwave Club will issue the QSL cards for the correct reports on that segment of Wavescan program. We are issuing QSL card by email to the report sent by email. Our address for your email report is jswcqsl@live.jp. I repeat, jswcqsl@live.jp. We continue to issue the printed QSL card by the same system as before. Your report should be addressed to JSWC PO Box 44 Kamakura, which is KAMAKURA, postal code 248-8691, Japan. One ILC or $2 for return postage will be appreciated. For this edition of DX Report, we'd like to thank Mr. Yoshiaki Hayashi, Mr. Iwao Nagatani, Mr. Chiaki Shimada, and Mr. Kazuaki Oikawa for sharing the information with us. Thank you for listening, and please join us for our next edition of DX Report of Japan Shortwave Club. And I'm Yukiko Tsuji.
And we end WaveScan today with music from Kiribati. This is Beautiful Sunday by Teddy Boy. Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, we'll have our Radio Caroline update. We'll talk with Daniel Robinson of Red Telecom about the HFCC B24 Frequency Coordination Conference, which just concluded in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, and our Philippine DX report as well. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.